off to a flame. Mama raised me right, that just leaves me to blame. When I get a little sideways on honky tonk tear, I'm old enough to know better, but I'm still too young to care. Cowgirls with an attitude, boots and tight blue jeans, take my mind off doing right and doing other things. When the weekend's gone, I won't have a dime to spare. I'm old enough to know better, but I'm still too young to care. Monday morning I wake up with a hammer in my hand. The boss man yelling something at me that I don't understand. I don't know how I got to work, but I sure know I'm there.
This is a special report from ABC News, The Courts, and Trump. I'm Michelle Franzen. Supreme Court justices heard arguments on presidential immunity today and whether it should apply for acts carried out while in office. The decision could impact the special counsel's 2020 election interference case against Donald Trump and other criminal cases he faces.
Even the justices on the right were keen to point out that some of the charges against Trump applied to his alleged private acts rather than his official acts as president. Trump's attorney said the proper course would be for the court to strike official acts from the indictment and then have the case go to trial based on whatever remains. But broadly, over more than 2.5 hours of this oral argument, the justices really struggled with where to draw an immunity line, not just for this case, but for all future presidents.
ABC's Stephen Portnoy. Trump was in New York City attending his criminal hush money trial. Testimony resumed with prosecution witness David Pecker, the former owner of the National Enquirer, back on the stand. This is ABC News. The Supreme Court yesterday heard arguments on whether federal law can override state abortion bans if a woman's health is at risk. Those arguments heard on the same day Arizona House lawmakers voted to repeal a law written in 1864, essentially banning all abortions. More from ABC's Rachel Scott.
Arizona is one step closer to repealing a near total ban on abortion, written into law before it was even a state.
You've passed House Bill 2677.
After 2 weeks of stalemate, the state legislature advancing a bill with three Republicans joining all Democrats. 14 states have banned abortion from the point of conception since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade.
A final vote expected next week. More than 30 people have died across Kenya. Days of torrential rain triggered widespread flooding across the country, turning roads into rivers. Half of Kenya's 47 counties have been affected by flooding. I'm Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
Some days I cover up because of my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. Now I'm hitting the road with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi, risankizumab riza, a prescription-only 150 milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. Everything. With Skyrizi, 3 out of 4 people achieved 90% clearer skin at 4 months. And Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin, and that means everything. Ask your doctor today about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist prescribed biologic in psoriasis, and visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Wisconsin Radio Network News, I'm Ted Aylin. A school resource officer charged with sexual misconduct with a student now faces multiple charges for molesting animals.
Former Kewaskum School Resources Officer Stephen Rosales is now facing 3 counts of bestiality in Fond du Lac County. The Fond du Lac County District Attorney's Office confirms that Rosales was arrested this week for molesting animals, though no other details have been released in the case. Rosales has already been charged in Washington County Court with sexual misconduct by school staff and misconduct in public office. In that case, Rosales is accused of exchanging sexual messages and photos with an 18-year-old girl at Kewaskum High School. Terry Kovarik, Wisconsin Radio Network.
Waukesha man will spend decades in prison after being convicted of sex trafficking. Using the internet and dating apps, federal prosecutors say 35-year-old Cornelius Jackson recruited victims for sex trafficking and forced women into sex acts in Wisconsin and across the country. The victims testified that Jackson would strangle them and keep all their money. Jackson was sentenced Wednesday to 30 years in prison, followed by 10 more years of supervised release. He's also required to register as a sex offender for life. Wisconsin Congressman Mark Pecan says Israel's actions in Gaza are hurting President Joe Biden's re-election campaign in Wisconsin. The Second District Democrat wants Biden to press Israel on 2 points.
No offensive weapons from the U.S. in Rafah would be the biggest signal in the groups I talk to. I think that's very, very important. And some accountability on what's getting in for assistance, food and water, and protection of the aid workers.
Pecan, who voted against the latest military aid package for Israel, says Gaza is among the top concerns he's heard at recent town halls in his district. You're listening to Wisconsin Radio Network News.
While the rest of the world paused during the COVID pandemic, Worthington, Minnesota has been busy. Worthington has rebuilt 4 parks, built an indoor turf rec center, a splash pad, a community pavilion, pickleball courts, lighted biking and walking trails, and added lake rentals. But we're just getting started. A lakeside eatery and a new outdoor aquatic center is coming. And here's the thing. Worthington, Minnesota is a great place to eat, play, live, and stay. This is your invitation. Worthington, it's worth a look.
Here's your Real Country 1430 forecast.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. A high-pressure system continues to sit overhead today, keeping us happy under sunny skies and highs soaring to the mid-60s. Winds begin to get a little feisty tonight as showers and thunderstorms strike us tomorrow. One call to Tax Solutions Now will solve all of your IRS problems. 1-800-281-8193. Right now, it's 59 degrees.
This is AM 1430 WRDN, Duran Mondovi at Wabasha. The following program was pre-recorded.
State University, and directly following the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. I had backup here at some point from Chip Flory. Chip, do you read?
Keep it going there, Davis.
That doesn't sound anything like Chip at all. No, imposter, I say. No, imposter.
I can imitate a lot of guys. Chip Flory is absolutely one I cannot do.
Can confirm. Welcome to AgriTalk, everybody. Joe Stackler, his walking is nothing to scoff at. You know, a lot of different ones that come out of nowhere. Joe Stackler, everybody. I don't know what happened to Chip. We were just talking, and suddenly he's gone. But I can tell you this: I'll have some more about this in the news here. But we're going to build on a conversation that I think is probably going to be ongoing for the foreseeable future. On this this bird flu into the dairy deal, already there's some confusion, some this and that about what even to call it. USDA's APHIS refused to use the nomenclature that the American Bovine Practitioners suggested, and so we're just sort of calling it HPAI, bird flu. I don't know. That aside, Dr. Andrew Bowman went out and took some samples. And in case you missed it yesterday on the program when we just went through some of his findings, and a special thanks to Tyne Morgan on that with Dr. Andrew Bowman from Ohio State University. We're going to let him talk about his findings. And gosh, I don't even know if we can even begin to discuss implications just yet. But we're talking bird flu with Dr. Andrew Bowman. This is going to be a good one. Before that, Dr. Scott Brown from Mizzou. Always a great conversation with Dr. Scott Brown. And, of course, Greg Henderson coming at you from Drovers. I wonder if he's got any thoughts on this, because it does seem like the news, again, I've got details here, but there's been some news that impacted the beef cattle market, the futures, fat cattle futures responding to some of this news here, and it does sound like Chip has made his way back into the fold. You good, buddy?
Well, I'm not good. I'm looking for a better connection.
Okay.
But this will do for now. The beef market is clearly responding to what is going on in the dairy herds, and mm-hmm. and when Colombia makes the announcement that they're going to stop importing beef from the states that they found or confirmed H5N1 in dairy cattle, that's a game changer. That elevates the whole situation for anybody that's got any bovine, Davis. Yep. It's a game changer.
Indeed. We're going to dig deep into that coming up here. Let me get to the news. I'll start at the National Weather Service weather outlook, where unsettled weather and severe storm chances will continue to expand across much of the central United States over the next several days. Here in Kansas City this morning, we're 56 degrees currently and cloudy. But when my alarm went off before the sun came up, it was raining, and it was a lovely sound. Increasing risk of flash flooding across parts of central and eastern Oklahoma on Saturday night. Active fire weather pattern to emerge over the southern high plains today, Chip.
Yeah, you had a heck of a storm system rolling through there this morning. Now, that is expected to turn into widespread activity across the Midwest tonight, into tomorrow, into Saturday, into Sunday. They're still talking about 3+ inches of rain for us up in northeast Iowa.
Well, can confirm there's water in the skies and it's headed your way. Mandated testing for bird flu in dairy cows being transported between states has been announced by the Biden administration. USDA's new order stipulates that cows must test negative for the influenza A viruses, which include bird flu, before transport, and herds with positive tests must report cattle movements to assist with disease tracing. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken called on China to provide a level playing field for American businesses as he began a visit with Chinese leaders. The latest Special 301 report, coinciding with Blinken's visit to China, criticizes Beijing for a slow pace of IP reforms and ongoing concerns like technology transfer, counterfeiting, and online piracy. Despite some improvements, significant issues remain. The Biden administration has set a national objective to achieve carbon-neutral freight shipping now. To initiate this goal, they held a roundtable involving various stakeholders such as truck fleet managers, port directors, utility executives, and local government officials. This move, supported by federal funding, aimed at electrifying ports and reducing emissions. The Federal Reserve's preferred measure of inflation, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, will be updated Friday. Economists anticipate the PCE index will show a 2.6% rise in prices over the 12 months ending in March. That exceeds the Fed's long-term target of 2%. The U.S. economy grew at a slower pace of 1.6% on an annualized basis in the first quarter of 2024, down from 3.4% in the prior quarter, and falling short of the 2.5% growth anticipated by analysts. And finally, Ford Motor surpassed earning expectations for the first quarter with robust sales in trucks and commercial vehicles, compensating for its electric vehicle division's losses. The company sustained its earnings outlook for 2024. Chip, you want to talk to Greg, or should I bring him in?
Yeah, I got it, buddy. All right, thank you so much, Davis. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director of Drovers. How you doing, bud?
Please unmute, Greg.
Well, if Greg were
here. Are you there, Greg?
He's muted.
All right.
Oh, we might need you to unmute there, bud.
This is a radio producer's dream of a show. I just like to tell all our listeners. I couldn't plan it any better.
I'm over here trying to figure out what rhymes with yogurt. That's what I'm doing today.
So can you hear me now, Chip?
Hey,
there you are, Greg. Talk to me quickly about cow slaughter.
Yeah, cow slaughter down 13%. That puts the beef cow cutout up 24% this year. And that means that we're going to have more imported beef this year, Chip, because we need the hamburger, the 90% leans for grinding. Right now, Brazil is our leading importer. They're trying to get as much beef into the U.S. as they can before that tariff goes up to 26% on the to fill that quota. So going to see more excellent prices for those cull cows. And obviously that affects those dairy cows that are moving to slaughter with, you know, if they've done that with those cattle with the bird flu.
Right, right, exactly. You know, the way that you said that we need some beef imports in here to provide, we're talking about providing trim for hamburger, right?
We don't want to grind the chucks and the rounds from those fed cattle to supply the hamburger market. We want to bring in the cheaper trim from our export markets so we can sell the good products from USA beef at a higher price.
Amen. Amen. I love it. Thank you, Greg. That is Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Coming up next, we're going to have a conversation with Scott Brown, University of Missouri, here on AgriTalk.
Dr. Kirk Ramsey is a professional services veterinarian with Neogen. Dr. Ramsey, talk to me about the many insect pests that cattlemen need to manage each year.
You know, Chip, as much as we love warm weather brings flies and ticks. And those ticks wreak havoc on the cattle industry. So having good protocols in place for pest control is critical for every operation. You know, Chip, one thing I always see with operations that have the best success in managing insecticides is they always follow a multimodal approach, meaning they look for ways to decrease insect populations with both on-animal insecticide products, but also looking at ways to decrease the population at the breeding sources, such as around barns, stalls, and manure handling areas. The other key element to a good insect control protocol is knowing what insects we are targeting, where they replicate, and when to apply products to achieve the best results.
Wow, that is certainly a lot for the cattlemen to manage. So what product do you recommend that ranchers use to combat these insects?
So Protectis is Neogen's flagship boron insecticide. Protectis is a formulation of three products that include a new technology pyrethroid, an insect growth regulator, and a synergist. This formulation ensures that with proper application timing, you can achieve season-long insect relief. Neogen also has products great for premise applications. Using these products around barns, stalls, and other high insect areas, you can target flies at their breeding source.
Excellent, Dr. Ramsey. Hey, where can listeners go for more information?
Yeah, for more information, you can go to neogen.com or contact your local Neogen representative.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Ramsey. That is Dr. Kirk Ramsey, professional services veterinarian with Neogen.
Compeer Financial helped us get into our forever home.
They helped me expand more than acreage.
And helped our dairy grow for the next generation.
At Compeer Financial, we see potential in every plan. Our unique perspective finds solutions to your challenges. And our specially trained financial team guides you every step of the way. Partner with us to make your goals possible. Compeer.com. Compeer Financial ACA is an equal opportunity lender and equal opportunity provider. NMLS number 619731. Copyright 2019. All rights reserved.
Max Armstrong here. The demand for nitrogen has never been higher. Fortunately, Pivot Bio has transformed the way fertilizer is produced and used by farmers. Unlike synthetic nitrogen fertilizers, the cost of Pivot Bio Proven 40 is every bit as consistent as its performance. And since it's applied in furrow at planting, it's weatherproof.
To learn more, contact Bauer Seeds in service in Durand, Wisconsin. Call 715-577-8541.
The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk. Call us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Okay, so it's early winter, and you got to get from one side of the creek to the other side of the creek.
Ooh,
and you just kind of put your toe out there on the ice, you know, and you're testing it, and you're trying to figure out, that is exactly how I feel at this moment.
Really?
Yes. Can you hear me? Is everything good?
You sound fantastic.
Well,
yeah.
Good. Good. Yeah. The ice must be thick enough. It's going to hold. It's going to hold, Davis.
You know what? Let's just be safe and belly slide across this creek here. Let's disperse the weight.
Yeah, that's what Big Apple Joe is asking us to do right now. You know, let's take some extra precaution and make sure that everything is going to stay up and running.
How about this? You go across the creek and I'll wait here and see if you make it. How's that?
Well, yeah. Come on, little buddy, let's go.
Wear your life preserver too.
Yeah, right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad to be able to talk with you on this Thursday morning. Wow, here we are
already.
had a conversation there with Greg Henderson. It's time for a conversation now with Scott Brown from the University of Missouri. Scott, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing good, Chip. Thanks for having me on today.
You bet. Glad you're here. So we've been talking about the Ag Economist Monthly Monitor for a while. And when we started it, we talked about what it is, why it's being done, where the information can be found. But we haven't talked about that again since. So remind us, how is the survey done? Who is surveyed? And where are the results of the survey?
Yeah, so Chip, we're really trying to find the ag economists that are following markets on a daily basis, whether they're in academia or industry, and posing where do they see markets going? Where are corn prices headed? What's the overall ag situation? You know, so we roughly have about 70 on our list that we're trying to survey each month. And beyond kind of the traditional, where do you see markets today? Asking them a few of the key questions that are being tossed about, if you will, for discussion, trying to get their insight. So maybe it's a smaller subset of, again, these ag economists that I think follow markets every day, following USDA yeah. data, getting their responses to whatever the issues are of the day.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. And when it comes, you're doing it on a monthly basis. And the information then, some analysis on the survey that was done, it's available on agweb.com through Farm Journal. And are you making it available?
We are making it available. By and large, I'll say AgWeb is the right place to go. Got we're it. Also turning out that information to those that we're surveying.
Gotcha. Okay, good. Okay, so here we are. We are a month after the survey for the prospective plantings report. We know more about the markets. We know more about the weather. I don't know if we know enough about the markets or the weather to make final determination on what the planted acres are going to be. But is there any consensus and a change from those planting intentions that we got back on March 28?
So we did survey the group to ask them both corn and soybean acreage numbers that they expected to see when we got June acreage report out, Chip. And we increased, so we said the group said 90.9 million acres of corn, so up about 900,000 acres from what USDA said in prospective plantings. And then soybeans, 86.8, up 300,000 acres. So maybe some of those acres that people wondered where they went to, our group saying they'll get planted at the end of the day, they'll show up once we get to the June acreage number.
Okay. That's some of the acres that we're missing, right, Scott? I mean, wasn't it like 6.3 million from principal crop acres that were quote-unquote missing?
That's correct. That's correct. And we even asked them some, hey, give us your feedback. Why the big decline? And we did get a lot of responses back to that. You know, some suggested, hey, that's those principal crop acres were still up 2 million from the prevent plant year of 2022. Some would have said, hey, there wasn't, but about 45% survey participation in prospective plantings. Perhaps the data is missing some lower returns, maybe affecting how many acres we're going to plant this year. So there was a lot of answers to that. What happened to those acres?
Yeah.
We'll see what we end up with at the end of the day.
Right. And here we go now heading into what should be the most active time of the planting season. And we've got plenty of rain in the forecast that could push things back and create some issues for us down the road that we're going to have to adjust for. And the markets will have to adjust for it. That's what markets do. The general outlook for revenue on the farm based on, you know, from a row crop producer's perspective, based on the way that the markets are trading right now, it's going to be a tough year compared to the past two and even 3 years when it comes to revenue. Are those expectations driving any changes in trends or even accelerating some trends, Scott?
I do think so. I don't think we've seen much to this point. However, looking forward, one could talk about some different trends in terms of. I think this idea is margins are tight. This often makes consolidation happen at a quicker pace. Yeah. Yeah. So I wouldn't be completely surprised to find farms getting bigger, trying to stretch fixed expenses over more acres in this case. And so I think some of those things could be coming if these margins continue to be as tight as we are seeing them getting today.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Did you ask about expectations on the farm bill when this thing might get wrapped up?
We asked them whether 2024 or when in 2025.
Okay.
And nobody answered that they anticipated a 2024 farm bill.
Nobody?
No of the responses would have suggested 2024.
Wow.
Almost half would have suggested in the second half of 2025.
Okay.
There were a few responses that would have said after 2025 as well. So I will say I think there's a lot of the economists that expect this will still be a period of time before we get a farm bill to the finish line.
Yeah. Yeah. Had a conversation earlier this week with House Ag Committee Chairman Glenn Thompson, and he's going to put the chairman's mark out there before Memorial Day. He expects some action on the House side of things, but action on the House is different than getting a farm bill done, isn't it?
It is, and you know, so to my, I'll say to the point to be made here, it isn't like folks aren't working to try to get a farm bill to the finish line. Just trying to get enough consensus to get enough votes to get off the floor of the House through the Senate. I think there's still a lot of issues left to work through. It doesn't mean they can't finish this year, but it's a very difficult task given the number of different opinions, ideas about how to make this farm bill happen.
Okay. So if it doesn't happen, if there is another one-year extension, does it create any risk for average Joe farmer?
Well, so it looks like we would probably do a straight extension of the 18 farm bill. So things like crop insurance, ARC and PLC programs would continue for another year. I think generally those have been good safety net programs for producers. I guess the risk, Chip, is that if these margins get tight, as we alluded to earlier, do these safety net programs work as well as they should?
Right.
And maybe that's the impetus to make us get things done sooner. If it gets tougher out here in the ag community, or perhaps that gets us to a new farm bill sooner as well.
Gotcha. Hey, did the detection of HPAI H5N1 in the dairy cattle, did that happen soon enough to make it into the survey?
So it did, Chip. We asked the question about whether folks thought that was a black swan event. Roughly 60% of our folks answered no, that they did not consider it a black swan event. We were asking them what they thought the longer-term impacts were. There were questions about both domestic and international demand that could change. Yeah. But no one was ready to say too much about those impacts yet, as consumers to this point don't appear to have felt like there are any issues with the food supply at this point.
Right. Well, and, you know, quite frankly, we're still trying to figure out exactly just how widespread it is and how much of a challenge it is going to be to overcome. Scott, good stuff. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, I appreciate it, Chip.
All right, Scott Brown, University of Missouri. We've got Dr. Bowman from Ohio State up next.
When we told growers that Bayer Premium Trifold herbicide for corn delivers visibly clean fields for up to 8 weeks, they were a bit skeptical.
We'll see how it works.
So we decided to prove it. We set up cameras in multiple cornfields, treated them with Trifold, and filmed for 24 hours a day. For 8 weeks, we saw a variety of weather conditions, and Trifold worked.
See for yourself at trivoltinaction.com. Trivolt is a restricted-use pesticide. Consult your state pesticide regulator for specific restrictions. Read and follow pesticide label directions.
Agriculture drives this country.
Congress recently invested $20 billion in conservation practices.
These programs help small farmers better their practice at a cost that they can afford.
They've helped me to not only take care of my family, but to take care of the land.
Today, these funds are at risk. Congress, protect conservation funding in the Farm Bill and keep agriculture viable for future generations. Learn more at investinourland.org. Paid for by Invest in Our Land.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach wheat is trying to make it a sixth consecutive day. Not a lot of change in prices right now.
Stay clean and dry while doing chores around the farm with waterproof gear from UtterTech. From waterproof bibbed overalls, aprons, pouches, jackets, and more, UtterTech has the workwear to keep you clean, dry, and working efficiently on the farm. Just machine wash and dry, and your UtterTech workwear is ready to go for the next day. UtterTech has products for veterinarians, poultry, swine, goat farmers, and even kids, too. See all the UtterTech products designed to help you on the farm at UtterTechInc.com.
Double-digit gains in the milk markets with this WRDN market update. I'm Brian Winnekins. At the Mercantile Exchange, May milk up 34 to 1812, June up 21 to 1812, July up 16 to 1847, August up 14 at 1866. Live and feeder cattle markets now are moving up mostly higher as the cattle contracts move back to trading higher. Traders are shaking the news regarding the HPAI virus that was spread again on Wednesday and are refocusing support that feeder cattle sales have been seeing in the countryside. Same goes for live cattle now, as the live cattle contracts are moving back higher. Hog markets, meanwhile, though, are moving mostly lower. Another poor export inspections report pressuring the hog markets. April live cattle now up $1.65 to $183.75. April feeder cattle up $1.77 to $244.87. May hogs down $1.97 to $95.37. Chicago Board of Trade corn markets are mostly higher. Wheat mostly higher. Some of this is weather-related concerns of dry weather in the Black Sea region and in South America. Also, cool and wet weather in Northern Europe helping to support corn and wheat. Soybeans lower, though, as Argentinian soybean bushels continue to come online as the South American export season continues to stay in high gear. New crop corn up 2.25 to 475. New crop beans down 2.5 to 1172. Chicago wheat may up 8.5 to 603. Minneapolis wheat may up 9 to 688. With this market update, I'm Brian Winnekins.
Got yield? The Wisconsin Soybean Association is excited to announce the 2024 Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. Highlighting the innovative production practices of Wisconsin soybean growers, the Yield Contest celebrates soybean growers across the state and their dedication to improving their operations. Two winners will be selected from four geographical divisions with additional awards available. Entry forms must be postmarked by August 31st, so don't wait. For more information, visit wissoybean.org.
There are many reasons growers trust Stein on their operations. For starters, we're home to the industry's highest yielding genetics. But we have something else just as powerful and reliable as our products: service. With Stein, growers have the benefit of leveraging decades of knowledge from our talented agronomy and sales teams. We're ready to walk the fields with you to ensure you get the yield benefits Stein Genetics can bring to your farm. Stein Seed. Dedicated to yield. Committed to you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you're with us on this Thursday morning. Yesterday afternoon, I had a conversation with Dr. Andrew Bowman. He is an associate professor at the College of Veterinary Medicine at The Ohio State University. And Dr. Bowman joins us right now. Thank you for making time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. So tell me about your lab first. What is normally the focus of your research?
Yeah, so our lab works on influenza in animals, and we have a specific interest in transmission between animals, and then also an interest in spillover into people. So we spend a lot of our time looking at pigs and birds and influenza viruses that are usually in those species and occasionally spill over into people or maybe spill over into other species. So we really try to understand how that happens in ways that we can limit that spread both within species and then to other species as well.
Right.
Yeah, that's we're generally trying to figure out how flu behaves in animals.
Yeah, but you're looking at influenza on a regular basis, maybe not in cattle. So what pulled your attention to the H5N1 in cattle? I mean, it's a kind of a rare opportunity to study, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, cattle in general were not thought of as a major host for influenza. You know, as the world's looking around trying to figure out who the influenza experts are in cattle, there aren't any. Right. Yeah. We've all been looking at other species. And so we said, you know, this is our job. We're supposed to be looking at influenza in animals, and here's another host. And so wow. We picked up the torch and said, let's get cracking.
Good. Good. Somebody had to do it. I'm glad you did. So we learned from your conversation yesterday with Tyne Morgan that 58 of 150 milk samples pulled from grocery store shelves in 6 states showed traces of H5N1 virus, not the actual live virus, but evidence that the virus was there before pasteurization. Am I explaining that right?
Yeah, so we found viral RNA, right? So okay. Presence of viral RNA indicating that there was virus there at some point in time, and likely had been inactivated through the pasteurization channels. But that there had been virus in the milk at some point in time. And so no indication that it's viable, but
right.
Definitely indication that there has been virus in the milk.
Okay, so once you've made that determination in your lab, what's the next step for that milk sample? Where does it go next?
Yeah, so we are part of a larger center that uses all the resources we have in the center. And so we collaborate with Richard Webby at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. And so our samples went to that lab where they could then assess whether there's viable virus in those samples.
Okay. And in the 58 samples where you found residue of the virus, there's no viable virus to be detected. Is that correct?
Correct. To date, we have no evidence that there is viable virus there. And that's what we would expect pasteurization to do. And so we're quite happy about that. But certainly gives us the idea that we really need to evaluate that situation on a larger scale. Obviously, 150 milk samples is you know, a small drop in the right. in the milk bucket, per se.
Right, exactly. So how large of an area does that cover, those 150 samples, geographically? What area was represented by those 150 original milk samples?
Oh, we're in the Midwest, so okay. You know, we did what we could to cover the Midwest.
Yeah,
and you know, had some students out there that are great, you know, flu hunters, and took a road trip and bought some milk.
Perfect. So the 58 samples that showed residue from the virus or of the virus, did those samples come from any specific region?
A fairly broad region. You know, we tracked the milk plant codes on the cartons of milk, and so milk production plants in 10 different states. So a pretty large sampling to give us the idea that there's a fair bit of virus out there,
yeah,
that we really don't have a handle on.
Right. Yeah, I'm not going to ask you to make any leaps of logic or connect any dots that are too far separated or anything like that. But what does it mean when close to 40% of the milk samples that you pulled tested positive for residue of this virus?
I think it gives us the idea that it's more prevalent than what we've given it credit for. Yeah. I think we really have to try to understand how this virus is moving within cattle herds and between cattle herds. And you know, as we've kind of seen across the country, there are different presentations in different herds. Some notice clinical signs, other herds have exactly zero evidence that they have sick animals. And so, you know, changes in the environment or the virus or the host, right, may lead to those different presentations. You know, as I said, no one was looking at cattle as a host of influenza. So we are all trying to get up to speed as fast as we can.
And it sounds, there, it sounds like there's more and more evidence that each and every cow doesn't exhibit each and every symptom. Is that correct?
I think that's very true. You know, and why, I don't know. I think there's a lot of potential reasons, and you know, we've got to dive into that. But it's probably not all that different than people, right? Every person who's infected with seasonal influenza doesn't exhibit the same course of disease, and so you know, the cows are individuals. We've got to understand why some are more severely affected than others.
Okay, so what do you think that you and the other flu hunters that are out there, what do you think that you have learned about how the virus is being transmitted? Have we learned anything conclusively?
I don't think we've learned anything conclusively at this point. Okay. I mean, while we're rapidly accumulating data, there's a lot more that's needed. I mean, we were really starting from scratch on this. And so, you know, as we're trying to accumulate data, it's you know, slow process to pull it all together. And you find out that, you know, people have been sampling one way in one herd and a different way in another herd. And so how do we put it all together? You know, it's a lot of teamwork and a lot of collaboration, and obviously in the environment of it's something new, we have to forge some new relationships, and we have to, you know, build trust with partners and work through all of that so that we can share data openly and get to the solutions, you know, to help the industry.
Right. Okay. So the measures that were announced by APHIS on Wednesday, testing for interstate movement, of dairy cattle, or testing before interstate movement, mandatory reporting of positive influenza A tests. Is that enough to gain a better understanding of how widely spread H5N1 is in the dairy herd?
I think that's a great first step. I think okay. we have to go to that point, you know, kind of, I think, you know, the lectures I give to first year veterinary students about how do we control disease in a population, and step one is stop movement, and the next one is test before you move. So, yeah, I think we've got this is the logical, you know, step is let's figure out what we have and don't let things move that are potentially infected.
Right. Okay. So APHIS also said that there is forthcoming guidance. It sounds like testing of dairy cows that are headed for slaughter is going to be mandatory. Is that just more data, you know, casting a bigger net and trying to find some of those cows that maybe were infected with the virus but weren't showing any symptoms?
Yeah, I think we need a much larger net cast at this point. You know, while APHIS released, 239 sequences on Sunday night, which was a great step forward, that's still not a lot of data in the grand scheme of things to try to understand. So, you know, some of it is let's understand why some animals are sick and some aren't. The other is if we find more sequences, that helps us kind of understand where the virus has been, how it's been changing, right? Yes. Let's us understand the pattern a little bit better. We need more dots on the map to help connect this up.
Okay. The same virus is the virus that is spreading in the dairy herds right now. Is it the same virus that made the jump from bird to bovine to begin with?
Yeah, we're trying to piece that together. You know, it's one of those, you know, sometimes I think as you get more data, you start to have to scratch your head a little bit and try to piece everything together. And, you know, one of those things that as you get more data, you don't know. And I think that picture will become more clear. It's definitely has origins in wild birds at some point in time. When that transmission happened and where, you know, that's still to be sorted out. And to be fair, that takes a long time. Right? We need to kind of see the trajectory the virus is going so that we can work backwards and try to figure out, you know, when and where that might have happened. Obviously, we want to look at how that happened so we could prevent it again in the future.
Yeah.
But you know, to date, like I said, we're working with sequences that are, you know, over just a couple month period. That's not really a long runway to try to draw inference from.
Gotcha. Only got about 30 seconds left here. But is the virus jumping back from bovine to birds? And is that virus, if that's happening, is it as deadly to birds as the original HPAI H5N1?
We're trying to figure that out.
I think
we've got some outbreaks that need further investigation, and we're trying to get to that and how it behaves in birds after it's been in cows. Again, we don't know yet. It's still so early.
Thank you. That is Dr. Andrew Bowman, Associate Professor, College of Veterinary Medicine at The Ohio State University. We'll be back with more AgriTalk in a moment.
Farming is one of the most demanding professions in the world, and not just physically. Financial challenges, weather, markets, isolation, you take on a lot. But what about taking care of you? The Wisconsin Farm Center at DATCP or DATCAP is here to help. They have resources to help you with whatever the next step may be. It's free and confidential. Self-care isn't selfish. It's time to take care of you with the support of the Wisconsin Farm Center.
You've paid top dollar for that new truck. Protect your investment with a new fabric sprayed-on bedliner from Osseo Plastics and Supply. A fabric bedliner protects your truck from rust and corrosion, and the permanent protective bond protects your truck from scratches. The anti-skid feature keeps your cargo from sliding around. The eye-catching bedliner looks factory installed, conforms to your accessories, and will increase your resale value of your truck. Find out how a fabric sprayed-on bedliner can work for you. Visit osseoplastics.com for more information.
When it comes to farming and family, the most important thing is laying down roots. Hey, it's Matthew from Bluff Country Feed and Seed in Mondovi, and we want to help you grow your roots. From planting to harvest, we can help you lay your foundation through quality feed, seed, fertilizer, and great service. We know how to help because we know Bluff Country. At Bluff Country, we understand the importance of strong roots in the community and the relationships we build. So plant your roots with us at Bluff Country Feed and Seed.
Just like you, Cenex Premium Diesel is no stranger to the field. In fact, Cenex Ruby Fieldmaster comes with a more complete additive package for a more complete burn. In simpler terms, you get restored power by up to 4.5% and restored fuel economy by up to 5%. Of course, there's always typical number 2 diesel. If you're not into the whole added power thing, Cenex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Your Cenex Ruby Fieldmaster distributor is Elsevia Co-op.
Your yields? Use Germinator Steel Closing Wheels. Germinator Steel Closing Wheels provide a 13 bushel advantage per acre in no-till and a 7 bushel advantage per acre in conventional as compared to standard rubber wheels.
Caution! Please confirm that you have additional space in your bin before adopting Germinator Closing Wheel Systems.
Call 712-520-6051 or visit farmshopmfg.com to place your order today.
Ahead of planting season, the Be Sure campaign, organized by the Growing Matters Coalition, is back again to protect pollinator habitats and safeguard biodiversity across America's farmland. Since 2019, the Be Sure campaign has helped educate millions of growers and applicators on best management practices and responsible stewardship when applying neonicotinoid products. For guidance, tips, and resources, visit growingmatters.org/besure.
The Scoop Podcast is where we talk about tight supply chains, emerging agronomic challenges, technology tools delivering ROI. I'm Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop and host of The Scoop Podcast. Join me as I interview leaders from across the ag retail sector. Farmers are working hard for every bushel, and their trusted advisors are by their side. Find The Scoop Podcast wherever you find podcasts so you are up to date on everything ag retail.
I love the Army. You just have this brotherhood that you can't find anywhere else. Since coming home from war, I've tried so many different things. I just remember thinking, like, it's over.
After being forced to medically retire, Angie battled addiction to prescription medications, eventually losing her house and marriage. Then she found Wounded Warrior Project.
And so I went online, I signed up, and I knew that Wounded Warrior Project was definitely my new community. One of the staff members, she put me in for peer mentor training. It was like for the first time someone recognized something good about me and thought that I had something to give back to someone else. Are you doing okay otherwise?
I've kind of picked up woodworking with my grandfather.
Oh, yeah. So I saw 3D stuff.
All those activities gave me a new way to live without drugs, a new way to live without feeling like I'm broken. You can live a meaningful life after traumatic experiences.
You wouldn't go into battle alone. You don't have to fight this alone. Visit woundedwarriorproject.org/not alone.
I'm Tyne Morgan, host of U.S. Farm Report. And more than a host, I'm a journalist, a wife, and a mom of two, raising a family in the heart of rural America. I understand the issues facing agriculture today because I live it every day. I see firsthand how farming and ranching isn't just a job, it's a way of life. Covering America's most important industry is what we do, and it's why U.S. Farm Report has been on the air for nearly 50 years. I invite you to join us every weekend for U.S. Farm Report, a timely, trusted tradition.
The truth is hard to come by these days, unless you listen to AgriTalk. And the good news is you are, in fact, listening to AgriTalk. I'm your pal, Davis Michelson. So glad you've chosen to spend some time with us today. Chip Flory is here as well. Question for you, buddy.
Yeah.
Just right off the top of your head, you're a creative guy. You've been a writer for, like, what, 60, 70 years, right? You're a word guy.
I'm into year two now.
Okay.
Into year two.
That still counts as veteran.
Okay.
I need something to rhyme with probiotics. You got anything? Just off the top of your head?
Kumbiotics.
Don't even think about it. Just go. Probiotics.
I'm going to go with kumbaya.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
I'm going to write that down.
Kumbaya. Okay. I'm not sure if that's going to work for you or not. See, I don't know. I'm, you know, the rhyming and the poetry and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd qualify as an experienced writer there or not.
I don't know.
Now, if this you want to get into the technicals of stuff, I could. And that's more up my alley.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay. I'm going to see if I can work in kumbaya in my song about probiotics and yogurt. We'll see.
I hope you can.
No promises. Let's talk about the conversation with Scott Brown.
Okay.
The respondents to the survey, let's put it that way, because I don't want to just say everybody, right? Because we're looking at a sampling.
Right.
Nobody really expects a 2024 farm bill, and around 50% of respondents said second half of 2025. In the meantime, just a straight extension of the 2018 farm bill. Now, his comment on that was, will the items in the 2018 farm bill reflect current conditions sufficiently?
Right.
To do what the farm bill is supposed to do.
Well, there are some adjustments that are made that are automatic to reference prices and so on.
Okay.
But do they reflect the current conditions and accurately reflect the economics of farming today? No. No, they don't. That's why a farm bill is... It should be a higher priority for everyone than what it is. Either that or this isn't going to be very popular.
Uh-oh.
Either that or scrap the dang thing.
Mm-hmm.
One or the other. Mm-hmm. Either do it so that it's going to do what it is intended to do, or scrap it. One of the two.
Yeah. See,
don't limp it along.
Right. And that's my question. Would we rather have something rushed through or wait another year to get something through?
There's no rush.
Well, I'm using that term loosely. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. There is no rush. All the field meetings have taken place, or I should say all the field meetings that need to take place have taken place. All the information gathering that needs to be done has been done. All the brainstorming on where are we going to get funding for this? Where are we going to get funding for that? That's all been done. It's just a question of getting the bill passed through the House, combine it with whatever comes out of the Senate, and get the thing passed by Congress. And that's the biggest trick of it all, getting it passed by Congress. And there are some legitimate spending concerns in the bill. I get that. So work it out.
Right.
Work it out. Mm-hmm. And find a way to make that farm safety net what it is supposed to be. If you're not going to do that, like I said, scrap it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to the HPAI in dairy. Our conversation with Dr. Bowman from Ohio State University. What's your takeaway?
Okay, first things first. We are observers in this. And trying to figure out exactly how it's being done or how well the industry is performing is really difficult. Mm. And part of the reason that I say that it's really difficult is because we now are hearing reports on the ground in Texas in particular, where some of the workers at the dairies that have been infected, some of the workers just don't want to go to the doctor because they don't want it to be confirmed that there has been cow to human transfer of this virus.
Oh, geez.
We don't really that we need to get in front and underreporting of the virus. Underreporting of the number of dairies that it's into in the Midwest. I mean, Dr. Bowman's crew went out there and it was almost 40% mm-hmm. of the milk samples that they found out there showed residue of the virus, RNA of the virus. That does not mean that it's a live virus. The milk is perfectly safe to consume, all of that. But there's obviously... The industry has fallen behind. The industry's behind this one. They're not in front of it. They got to get in front of it.
Well, and I think maybe I wouldn't say that's unfair, but I had no grasp of how pervasive and widespread this was. Dr. Bowman's work demonstrates to us two things. Number one, pasteurization kills the bugs.
Right.
And number two, It's spread wider than we originally had suspected.
Yes.
I don't know what to do with that.
Right. And what makes it really difficult is not knowing if the virus that is spreading in the dairy herds is the same as the virus that made the original jump from bird to bovine. Mm. And then is the virus making the jump back from bovine to bird?
Well, that's interesting.
There's and what's the how deadly is that virus that is making if the jump is being made from bovine back to bird? Lots of questions that still need a lot of answers.
Hey, look at
need
us finishing strong
out in front of it.
We finished strong, baby.
Amen. Hey, come back this afternoon. Jim Emter, Van On and Company on AgriTalk.
At FBN Finance, we know there's one thing that unites all farmers: progress. It drives them to wake up early and be better than the day before. And whether it's a new land purchase or refinancing your ranch, FBN Finance has the agricultural expertise to help you reach your goals. Simply put, FBN Finance puts farmers first. With great rates, instant approvals, and pre-qualifications on farmland loans, FBN Finance has everything you need to be your partner in the fields and with your finances. And now, you can get $500 off closing costs for loans over $250,000. Start your farmland loan today at fbn.com/agritalk or call 833-FBN-LEND. That's 833-FBN-LEND. FBN Finance, more than a lender. Financing offered by FBN Finance, LLC, and its lending partners. Available where FBN Finance, LLC is licensed. Terms and conditions apply. NMLS ID 1631119.
Smart businesses advertise on local radio. Durand's WRDN, 1430 AM and 107.3 FM. Business owners, listen up. What's the one advertising method that doesn't cost your customers money? Radio. It's portable. It's in cars, offices, homes, and businesses, and free to your potential customers. Radio works. Ask our advertisers, and you'll want your business on Durand's WRDN Radio at 1430 AM and now at 107.3 FM. Call 672-8989 today.
Okay, guys, we got to put our trays up for takeoff.
Where's Dad?
Oh, he's in the back. We could only get three seats together.
Daddy has my pillow.
He'll get it later. Can you not put your feet up, please?
Why aren't we going?
We must be in line for takeoff.
Like security?
Well, that was a different line.
I have to go.
We just sat down.
But I have to go.
The seatbelt sign's on.
Why aren't we moving?
Hey, no kicking.
We're just 15th in line for takeoff.
Son of a...
Don't go there.